This morning I'd like to start off by turning your attention to, there it is, Matthew 5, 38 through 48. Matthew 5, 38 through 48. Be reading from the New King James Version. I invite you to follow along in the version you have before you there. You have heard it was said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. You've heard it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends the rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your heavenly Father in heaven is perfect. In New Testament times, in the Roman Empire, they had couriers. And the couriers were authorized to press into service any available person or beast for transportation of official documents. But they could not compel a citizen to go further than 1 mile. Citing this practice, Jesus is saying, don't go a mile with bitter and obvious resentment. Go 2 miles with cheerfulness and good grace. I think that pretty well expresses it. Citing this practice, we know that Jesus is talking about something other than going with a courier and carrying the messages or whatever it was that needed to be carried. The text is a lesson on attitude this morning. And I want to talk about the second mile. Let's consider, first of all, a comparison between the first mile and the second mile. The first mile is a mile of compulsion, according to verse 41. We look up the word compel, we find it means to impress into service. Simon of Cyrene was compelled to carry Jesus' cross. Notice in Matthew 27 and verse 32, they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name, him they compelled to bear his cross. Those who claim to be Christians, but who have the attitude of the first mile, are the ones who ask the question, why should I do any more? I'm already doing something, so why should I do any more? Or they might ask, how many assemblies a week do I have to attend to be faithful? How much do I have to work to be considered faithful? Or they might ask, how do I have to attend gospel meetings like we're going to have very soon? All of these things express are a false concept of service to God. These types are trying to see how little they can get away with and still be considered faithful. How little can I get away with? In reality, what we're talking about here is a matter of dedication and commitment. The first mile. But the second mile. Let's look at the second mile. The second mile is a more difficult mile because it's a mile of grace. It is a display of goodness and kindness. It is accomplished by love for the Lord. Notice, if you will, John 14:23 Jesus said, if anyone loves me, he keeps my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. And in 1 John chapter 4, verse 18, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment. But he who fears has not been made perfect in love. Notice the importance of love for the second mile. It is so important. But traveling on this second mile, we're to look at a person who asked the question, what more can I do? You see the contrast? What more can I do? Not how much, a little I mean, can I get away with, but what more can I do? There must be something. And he also is manifesting an attitude we see in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58. Over there, Paul says, we are to be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. What? Hold it. Always abounding in the work of the Lord? What does that mean? What does that mean? Well, the word abound here is literally to overflow, excel, or exceed. Now, you see the difference between the word abound and the first mile Christian who wants to just see how little they can get away with? This is doing more than just what's necessary. It's overflowing. It is abounding. And the reverse of this attitude is seen in Luke chapter 6 and verse 38. Now, look at this carefully. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your bosom. What does that mean? It won't just be given to you a little bit. It will abound. It'll just floor you. It'll be so much. That's what we're talking about here. Now, let's look at some other applications of this attitude. When smitten, he says, turn the other cheek, verses 38 and 39. This is talking about a personal challenge to a duel or inflicting of injury and insult. In 1 Peter 1, 20 and 20 through 23, Peter says, for what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For this you were called, because Christ also suffered for you, or for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. Now, contrast that with the eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth idea. The people under the law had taken this out of context. Yes, it's in the law of Moses, but it is intended to be done by the law and not individuals. Not individuals. They had gotten to the point where they inflicted their own punishment. They were the ones who stood their ground, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, instead of going to law for it. Now, what does turn the other cheek imply for you and me? Well, turn the other cheek means don't sink to their level. You know, My dad always told me that pigs roll around in the mud. And you don't have to get down in the mud and waller with them. But when you do, you're going to look like them. You're going to have mud all over you. Now, what he was trying to say was this. You don't have to be engaged with a person who is bent on giving you a good lashing or whipping up on you. You don't have to be engaged with them. You just walk away. And if they do strike you, you just still walk away. That's what it says. Don't sink to their level. Instead, rise above any personal affront that they may cause for you. Now, that's a lot easier said than done. That's a lot easier said than done. I remember one time, some guy was just intent on whipping up on me. And he knocked me down. And he kept saying, fight, fight. And I wouldn't do it. It took all the fun out of it. It took all the fun out of it for him. Because I wouldn't fight back. I wasn't going to get involved in that. I got a pretty good smashing in my head and my nose was a little sore. But that's all it was. That's all it was. You don't have to lower yourself to the position that the person who wants to strike you has gone. Don't lower yourself to that position. But look also, when sued for your tunic, it says in verse 40, let him have your cloak. Now, the New American Standard renders this your shirt and coat. Your shirt and coat. The shirt or tunic was a long inner garment of cotton or linen. And even the poorest Jew might have more than one, you'd think. But the cloak could not be taken from a man by law. In Exodus 22, verse 26 and 27, it says, if you ever take your neighbor's garment as a pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. For that is his only covering. It is his garment for his skin. What will he sleep in? And will it be when it cries to me, I will hear, for I am gracious. Now, the cloak or the coat that they wore over the shirt was a heavier blanket-like garment. We might call it a robe. Okay? And they wore it by day, and then by night, they used it as a blanket to sleep in. They were really conservative in their practices. They used it as a blanket to sleep in. Generally, a Jew would only possess one coat. And the law prohibited keeping it overnight as a pledge. Because you'd be depriving the man of his blanket to sleep in. A man's tunic or shirt might be taken. But Exodus 22, 26, and 27 shows the limitation of the cloak. Now, what do we learn from this? Well, the Christian never stands upon his rights because he considers others before he ever considers himself. Think about that. In Philippians 2 and 3, Paul said, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, there's the key, let each esteem others better than self. Now, some attitudes that don't go along with this. Well, I got my own problems. So what? Don't you consider others better than yourself? Try to help them with their problems? Well, he did me wrong one time, and I just can't get over that. So I'm not going to help him. Whatever happened to this lowliness of mind? And then there's another thing that goes along with it. Well, if I do that for him, I'll gain an advantage over him and he'll owe me. Now that, all those attitudes are condemned by that verse right there. All those attitudes are condemned. Now, what else does Jesus say? He said, give to the one who asks and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow. This is an attitude that we should have towards the needs of others. Jesus was speaking here of, evidently, speaking of those who are truly needy. We see Paul inspired to write to Timothy in 1 Timothy 5 and 8. If anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he's denied the faith. He's worse than an unbeliever. Certainly, our own household we take care of. And we care about them. But 2 Thessalonians, and in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10, Paul made a statement that I think is very important when it comes to seeing to the needs of others. And what is it? He says, if a man will not work, neither shall he eat. So when he talks about seeing to the needs of others, he's not talking about seeing to the needs of able-bodied persons who refuse to work. I see them all the time standing on the corner. Able-bodied. Now, here's what I see. Here's a person standing on the corner begging for money, and there's a sign on the building right behind him, help wanted. Huh? He doesn't want to work. No, he doesn't want to work. Why? He'd have to pay taxes. The way it is, he makes all the money that he makes tax-free. And if you give to him, you encourage him. I want you to think about that. He is hoping that you won't think about that. And that you will just gladly give him money. But you're encouraging it. There is no way that Jesus teaches us to encourage indolence or slothfulness. No, not a bit. One's attitude toward those in need must not be selfish, but must be liberal and generous. When I find out somebody's in need that I can help, I want to do everything I can for them. Everything. And that's the attitude of most of the brethren here, I know, because we've had occasions where this has arisen. We've had occasions where we got more than we needed. But why? It's because we care about each other. It's because we care about each other. And that's the attitude that Jesus wants us to have. Now, this last one is a toughie. Love your enemy. Love your enemy. What does that mean? Well, notice in this verse, it refers to those who hate you. This is not an unknown out here, somebody in La La Land out there who might hate you, but you don't know who they are. This is somebody that really, really hates you, and you know it. You know it. And it says, love them. Well, what does it mean, love them? The word is agapeo, which we recognize being a form of agape. And the word means to love, to be full of goodwill, to exhibit the same, an interest in others' welfare. Now, let's think about that for a minute. You mean to tell me that this fellow who just hates me, despises me, he says evil things about me, that I'm supposed to be full of goodwill towards him? And to exhibit that goodwill? Have an interest in his welfare? Yeah. That's what Jesus said. That's what Jesus said. And you know, sometimes it's really hard to do that. Because people who develop such a hateful attitude generally are pretty unapproachable. But you know, you have to do your part. Now, it doesn't mean you force yourself on them, but you have the right attitude towards them. You have the right attitude. Anyone, and this is what Jesus points out here, anyone can love the lovable. Now think about it. Anyone can love the lovable. I remember one preacher. He's one of the finest men I knew. And every time he held a meeting, somewhere in the course of the meeting, he'd say, because I'm so lovable. And the thing about it was, he was. He was the kind of man that you respected and you cared for because he loved God and he loved the truth. And he was lovable. But, you know, what about that fellow that's unlovable? What about that fellow that's unlovable? Well, anyone can do the first mile. But what about the second mile? It's the second mile attitude that loves the unlovable. Loving the unlovable. Look at Luke 17 and 10 with me for a moment, if you will, please. So likewise, when you have done all those things which you are commanded, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. I want you to think about that in light of the 1 mile and 2 mile. Remember, that first mile says, oh, I'm just going to do what I got to do. Now, how much can I get away with? Do I have to go the whole route? But the second mile says, I've only done what it was my duty to do. Now I got to do more. I got to do more. What do we learn? Well, here's what we learn. We must go the second mile. Why? Jesus told us to. It isn't a suggestion, folks. He told us to. And it's difficult. I'll grant you that it is difficult. Sometimes it's really difficult. But it must be done. And another thing, and I want you to remember this, it is one that is abundant with reward. Abundant with reward. Yeah. The rewards are more than you can imagine. So remember that when you're going through those difficult things, the reward is more abundant than you can imagine. Going the second mile. I know the lesson this morning has been primarily tailored to you who are Christians. And I don't apologize for that, because I preach to us as much as I preach to unbelievers.